everyone, and welcome to the Bright and Fit podcast. It's a beautiful day today. I'm your host and friend, Tatiana. On this first episode, I wanted to introduce myself briefly and share with you some fun facts about myself. Hello, hello. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is the Bright and Fit podcast, and I am Tatiana, your friend and host. Today is going to be a wonderful, wonderful topic. We're going to be talking about nutrition and fitness. And I have an expert, a wonderful friend and colleague, my friend Kathy Engram.
Hi.
And she is just wonderful. She has a lot of knowledge. I am so excited to share this episode with her. And I know that there are a lot of people that could benefit from this topic. So, hi, Kathy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good to hear. So today we wanna talk about a lot. And we know that when we record, we have so much time, but we wanna share so much good information. So tell us first, tell us about yourself.
Oh, that's a large topic, but I'll try to minimize it down, keep it interesting. Well, first of all, I was born in Kentucky, in Bardstown, Kentucky, and that is the bourbon capital of the world and America's most beautiful little town, actually. We have that status. But I was born into a family of 12. My mom and my dad was a machinist and mother was a homemaker. And we had 12 children, 8 boys, 4 girls. We had a huge family that just played together, lived together, and thrived together in physical activities and so forth. We didn't move maybe 1 to 2 times our whole life, so we stayed in the same place. We lived in a big forest, so we had a lot of experiences outdoors and gardened a lot. All the things you could think of as someone who could live in a, you know, on a large farm, but not a farm, more like just land and gardens, not animals and so forth. But it was wonderful.
Good. So what did you do during that time? Did you go to school in Kentucky? Did you go to college in Kentucky?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I went to, actually went 9 years to Catholic schools. And then when I was into my freshman year, we moved to public school in another school system and learned a whole lot of different types of diversity really in the public schools. And then after I was out of high school, I studied the business track in high school. Once I realized I couldn't do geometry very well, I went the business track.
Nice.
So it was a really good business track. And I went for a short-term stint at a business college. And when I came out of that, I was able to become a pharmacy tech and a bookkeeper for a large drugstore company for 5 years.
Wow, pharmacy tech and bookkeeper. Wow, that's amazing. Wonderful. Yeah. So then you moved from Kentucky, right?
Well, we stayed in Kentucky. And by then I was married. And in, let's say, 5 years after we got married, we did start a family. So I have 2 children, a 43-year-old and a 41-year-old, and they have brought me some grandchildren. But I actually stayed in Kentucky, and that's where the majority of my career was for 20 years from the mid-80s on. And then we moved here in 2006 to Florida.
That's amazing. Wow. So how does it feel like to share a household with 12 siblings?
Well, there's obviously what you would expect, a pecking order, and there's a hierarchy, and right. everyone has jobs, and the boys, not to prejudice and feel prejudiced by males, but the boys did take priority in the sports, a real sports. We all played sports, and I was real proficient in, you know, baseball, softball, basketball, volleyball, horseshoes, you name it.
Nice.
I could do it.
That's
but the
wonderful.
Boy, the boys got to play on the sports teams.
That's beautiful. So that's then you moved to Florida, right? You had your boy and girl and you moved to Florida. And then how do you start your fitness career? What certifications What certifications do you have? What do you teach? What are your licenses? Tell me everything. Tell us everything.
Sure. Well, just to back up to about 1982, I was fortunate enough to be able to start at the ground floor of the fitness industry in Kentucky. And my first trainings were through the International Dance Exercise Association, and a sports medicine college in Louisville hosted the first nutrition and sports medicine and fitness conference. And that was in 1982. By 86, I actually began a career working in a fitness center, a large multi-purpose fitness center, whereas we had to be highly trained. We couldn't teach unless we were certified. I think my first certification was IDEA Personal Trainer, AFA Group X, and then we went on and we had to take a lot of American College of Sports Medicine, fitness testing, exercise prescription, and those kind of things. And that's where I've really got the foundation and knowledge for my fitness management, and also my nutrition education was primarily all through the American College of Sports Medicine via, you know, really highly knowledgeable dietitians in our industry.
Right. And you were a pharmacy tech, right? So that was already kind of like a foundation for the fitness world.
Utilizing the pharmacy tech and the pharmaceuticals helps me
understand the kind of
pharmaceuticals. If you have pharmaceutical knowledge, you certainly understand about a patient's comorbidities and pharma versus, you know, lifestyle change pretty quick. And that really helped me design what I do now for sure.
So in 1986, you started teaching fitness classes. So what kind of classes did you start teaching up to now?
Low impact and high impact cardio was the thing. And we were still doing freestyle. And then we were on the ground floor step aerobics. So step aerobics came into play about the same time. And so we went from teaching freestyle to having to learn how to block and phrase and choreograph real fast. That was really tough. Took a lot of practice, not having a dance background, especially. But then I kind of evolved into the physique end of the industry and taught really neat classes that sculpted and toned and designed. Okay. And by then I was already a fitness manager in this particular facility, managing a team too. Mm-hmm. So I had specificities, I guess, in physique, and really loved the physique thing, and even competed a few times. So that was a learning curve, seven times to learn so I could help others with that.
So you went and participated in a contest for what?
Bodybuilding.
What, seven times?
Yes, ma'am.
That's amazing. That blows my mind so much. So how has the transition, like what do you feel like has transitioned in the fitness industry from how you were taught until now, stock nutrition wise, pharmaceutical wise, like without getting into the details first, before we connect into the fitness specificities, first, we're not medical professionals. To all of our listeners, we are coaches. We have information and knowledge that we want to share with our listeners. If you do need medical professional assistance, please seek the advice of a medical professional, doctor, specialist, or anybody on the field that you are 100% aware and do want to connect with. So this podcast is for the purpose of sharing knowledge and also for entertainment purposes only. So the first time that you taught a class versus now, like what has changed in the trends, like physique wise, like people obviously used to dress differently. We used to have a different mentality when going to a class. You said you were going full force on a step class. Now it's more, injury preventing oriented.
Exactly. Back in the beginning of fitness, we were already mostly fit. We didn't have as many people with comorbidities or health problems. Most of the people that jumped on the fitness bandwagon back in those days, they may have been runners and those types of athletes, because before gyms became a thing, right?
Right.
So we ran. Before gyms became a thing, we ran. That we were all
right,
running clubs, you know. And so anyway, the probability of or comparison to back in those days, everybody in the classes were fit already. So we geared it up toward that. But nowadays, our biggest challenge is integrating our new members or our clients into safe environments. So I don't think there was much change as far as assessments go. Let's, you know, if we want to talk about assessments of a client where they are now. The difference is that now when we assess people, because a lot of the women, especially that come into my environment, are going to have been working. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I first got in, all the moms were gym moms in the morning. Now the working moms have to have a place to go, or once they finish their mothering, they can take care of themselves. It's kind of been a big switch.
So basically, the way it's presented, and it makes sense, the 80s versus the 2000s and almost late 2000s now, right?
Yeah.
Well, mid 2000s, is people were working out to maintain before, because it was an active lifestyle since the beginning when we grew up, you know, running tracks and doing all the competitions and sports. So it was maintaining. Now it's preventing and trying to reach that stability, right?
Yes, prevention is probably the number one reason people are interested in fitness now, is prevention and trying to get a new lifestyle. Lifestyle management is quite a challenge for today's people. I'm so happy I was able to manage my lifestyle when I was younger.
Absolutely.
And I feel compassion toward the people, males and females, who just can't manage their lifestyle. And I think that's what provokes me to continue on in the industry. Even at 66, I'm still interested in doing all those things I used to do, which is basically giving take a leadership role with the individual.
Yeah.
To teach them how to do, to change their lifestyle.
Absolutely. So before we get into the actual detail of the topic today, how was your life 5 years ago versus now?
Well, it's nice when you hit a certain point in life and you can say, pick and choose more. 5 years ago, I was still a fitness manager. And that means I had a huge team of people to manage. It also meant I had a huge business plan, which I just love, because that is one of my niches is sales and development of individuals on a team. So when I was 5 years ago, I was probably in my last year of heavy duty fitness management, which could be, you know, you go to work and work 12 hours and then you come home and you get emails at 6 a.m. and 7 about what's happening today. And I have to say, I was so aggressive and successful with that particular job that would have been about 30 years of fitness management by then.
Oh my God.
Yeah, altogether. So if I think back about it, I mean, I really miss it, but I also have to say that was enough. And now it's time for me to take care of my clients and myself more, and not to be thinking about business every single day. But that's, I definitely awesome. Have the entrepreneurial spirit that you mentioned in some of your notes. And I think that entrepreneurship doesn't stop just because you're not managing a big business plan or a big team. You can individual. I definitely, and I actually like to mentor young fitness professionals too.
You have mentored me many times.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I like that. And that's something useful, you know, anytime we're doing things that are useful and productive. So yeah, that's how my life has changed. I'm not managing anybody but myself and my business plan and my clients.
Absolutely. So your life is a lot more relaxed now. Well, not relaxed, but a lot less crazy.
Well, it's, you know, it's true. It is a lot more relaxed. And, you know, when I first started becoming the person who could leave at 2 p.m., it's done.
Without feeling bad about it.
I was going out of the building kind of, you know, just feeling bad. And also, you know, almost feeling left out in a way because it's such an integral part of a large team. But now, you know, I don't think about it at all. I was able to start teaching again instead of just managing. So I'm teaching and I absolutely love it.
Good. Also, so you started first learning and teaching, and then you went into the kind of like the back production of the whole play. And then you went back to be in the you know, force.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's right.
So let's dive into the topic. And I do wanted to ask you more personal questions, but I'm going to throw them at the end because it's fun. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to talk about Eat This, Not That. Okay. So you do have your own program and it's called Dialogic, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a fitness nutrition. It is a nutrition and diet, right? Program.
Well, it's a lifestyle management program.
Right.
And that's how I like to reference it, lifestyle management program. And within the context of that, we teach people about the basics of nutrition. People that don't have health issues. In other words, we're not doing anything that would be out of our scope of practice because it's education that's readily available through the ADA. And I basically teach ADA nutrition, the food groups, the macros,
calculations. Tell our listeners what ADA means.
The American Dietetic Association years ago, all the way back in the 70s and 80s, fine-tuned a report that's called the ADA Exchange System, and you can look it up online. Many, many colleges will have references of that. The ADA has, in the context of what I teach, has positioned themselves years ago to say what in each food group is the exact exchange or portion and what the macro values are. And in today's world, especially, people don't know that, you know, we're right back.
Oh, yeah.
To people don't know that, you know, how many calories are in 1 ounce of protein or how many starch carbs are in a half cup of rice. They just don't know it. So pretty much that's what the ABCs of my program Dialogic is first we learn, and it takes about 4 weeks or so for people to break through, because they, instead of them wanting to be on a fad diet, they need to learn about the food groups. And once they learn those, it makes everything so much easier. So everything I do in my Dialogic program is based on learning about food groups, the pros and the cons, the best, the least, you know, eat this, not that.
Right, exactly. So because for me, oh my goodness, you were teaching, you know, and not to be bringing anything, because particularly it doesn't make any difference now because we're all professionals. We have so much information out there. When you were teaching, I was actually being born. So my first conception of fitness was completely different than yours, and nutrition was completely different than yours. Mm-hmm. I also did not grow up here in the States. Well, basically I did, but I didn't live in the country until I was in my teenage years.
Oh, okay.
So my first concept of nutrition was, you know, a mid-class family whose mom was a teacher. My mother is a high school teacher. My dad was a CPA, self-taught CPA, and then he worked other jobs. But for us in a third world country, nutrition has a total different meaning, Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I would say, yeah.
And we live in a state where we're so mixed. We have so many different communities. We have so different backgrounds, people coming from different countries as well, that it is really the core, I feel, the core of, mm-hmm. of diets and health, like nutrition-wise, to mm-hmm. first, you know, have the knowledge as an instructor, as a coach, as a program coach, especially, what is your concept of nutrition? So my initial concept of nutrition was, oh, I'm going to eat to survive because we are mm-hmm. not rich. We cannot choose what we eat. We're going to eat what our parents are going to feed us, right?
And that's how we were raised as well with 12 children. Yeah,
absolutely. It's so difficult to say, I want to eat this today and not that, like mm-hmm. it is not that, you know? So mm-hmm. When I was growing up, obviously, we did not have the variety of things that I had the chance to do, have access to when I moved to the States and I went to school and all of that. So what is the main concept that people who have no information about nutrition bring to you when they first get a consultation?
We'll do in a consultation, once we do their medical history and review their previous weight management history, because these days everybody brings one of those to the table pretty right. much, you know, they've lost how many pounds, if any, have they ever been on any type of real rigid dietary programs, etc. But then the next thing we do is we do like a nutritional quiz, and we're looking for give me an example of how many fruits you eat a day and what do you like. Give me an example of your fibrous vegetables and what do you like. What types of proteins do you eat? Do you eat animal proteins, vegetable proteins? Do you know anything about protein? How about, you know, so every food group, fruit, vegetable, proteins, dairy, starchy grains and those type of plant starches, and also healthy fats. So we assess their current intake. We can do an analysis of that in our software, and in that, or I can do a quick one that's just as easy for me. I can see deficiencies if someone only eats, you know, one meal a day. That's pretty right. obvious, right? But we can also take their current nutrition pattern and dump their data into my software program.
Oh, and wow.
That software program can do an analysis. Typically, we don't do that in the initial stages because their nutrition is imbalanced. But so, in other words, when we probably 4 weeks into a 6 to 12 week program, mm-hmm. we're still talking about what. At some point, though, we shift okay. gears and we start talking about when, where, why, and so on, all the other parts of what makes up their dietary intake. So it's a little bit of what they eat, but also all the things like, is it fast food? Is, you know, it's a real comprehensive type of progression that we use to make sure that, you know, it's one thing for them to learn it. That's the part of diet logic.
And right,
the
self-awareness, learn, right?
Learn it. That's the learn it part. And then when they start living it, you know, we find out, well, they don't have time to go to the grocery, or they're not able to cook all their meals at home, or they eat out 5 times a week. That's the part about the live it, you know. And then eventually, if all those things bond together and become a lifestyle pattern, then that's when they love it. And a lot of those theories and thoughts are different for each client because it is individualized. Some people can take one or two sessions, do an Eat Smart session, and they're good to go. And they can put the rest of their lifestyle in there and be fine.
Mm-hmm. And do you recommend that?
I'll give you an example. It was a really success story. This week, March, the end of March, I did a Eat Smart session, which is a comprehensive ADA review and a calculation of their macros using really science-based equations and calculations. So we did that. And she goes home with her Eat Smart kit, which has a pantry list, a grocery list, the ADA in review, so they understand each group. It's a real cool sheet that we have. And then food logs for her to log for herself and tips about logging. And then so this past week she came back. She had lost like approximately 8 pounds. And then she started sensing that she was stuck, which is the thing that happens.
Right. When, yes, you know, absolutely. We do know that.
You're going to lose weight. And then you're going to have some interferences and not work out a little bit and start eating bad. Then she recognized she needed more intervention. So this week we completed a session to create her in the Diet Master Pro software meal plan kit that has custom templates from a dietitian in Diet Master Pro. So I was able to upload and send her some really good meal plans to pull her Eat Smart back in, you know, and adjust the macros. It was really cool. But that's kind of a one-time thing, but she'll be accountable because she's training with a trainer. She's training with one of my fellow trainers. So I have that. Now, if I didn't know her, no, I wouldn't be in, you know, or she wasn't going to be in my midst, I would probably be doing recommending virtual coaching to bring all that together. So she not only learns it, she lives it and loves it, you know?
Right. So it's definitely a case by case scenario because it not is. Every shoe fits every person, right?
Right. Right.
Oh, wow. So this is a complete program and I want to know so much more because you talked about the software, you talked about the forms and the templates. Mm-hmm. So how did you start this program? Like what prompted you besides all of this information and knowledge that you had, what prompted you to create a program? And I also wanted to ask you some specific questions about nutrition that I feel everyone would like to know. Like I would like to know and anything else that you want to add. So tell me about the program first.
Well, when I a sidebar that wasn't in fitness, when I got into fitness, all of the health clubs had software that had Microsoft software and health check software. And with a dietitian on staff, we had software that could mimic meal planning the dietitian created for our clients. So since the late 80s, I've seen dietary software. And then having evolved a lot, and in 1998, I had the opportunity to start a new company while I was a fitness manager at a club in Lexington called VDK Advantage.
Okay.
And that's the lifestyle management part, VDK Advantage. So at some point we kept having all kinds of interest in custom meal planning. And I'm like, well, there's no way on God's green earth that I could ever afford to develop a software program myself. Right. What's out there? And I just happened to be at a trade show and I ran across the company Lifestyles Technology.
Okay.
And Lifestyles Technologies and John Shearer became good friends through the industry. And lo and behold, they had meal planning software that was for non-dietitians, and they provide the dietitian templates if you license yourself. It's not a license, it's a credential.
Wow.
It's a certification. So somehow, and I always say this was an intervention because I was always trying to figure out, how can I stay in my scope of practice? This is an entrepreneurial genius move. How am I going to do it? And I met him at a Idea World conference. And I, by the way, I went to 10 of those in my career. And it's the best thing that I ever did.
Nice.
I met him there. And in no time flat, I had sample software. And I loved it so much that this was in 1998, I invested in it to bring the license to the company that I owned, the VDK Advantage. And then the next step became, okay, how are we going to sell it? And we packaged it as part of our services, the meal planning service with that software. So since that time, I have maintained a license with that company. And then evolve again about 5 years. I'm like, how can I differentiate my company and make a brand? And it came to me through a couple of valued clients that had done the meal planning and had done the lifestyle changes and had done all this. And we together, there were three of us in the gym working out on a Sunday, branded, and I rushed right out and bought all the URLs and anything I could think of, Diet Logic. And the reason we called it Diet Logic was because if I said it once, I said it 1,000 times, you can't diet. And diets are delusional, ineffective eating tactics. And so we decided we would use the word diet, but put logic under it. And because that's what I do, is help people logic things out.
Logically self-awareness. So brilliant. So
that's how that got branded. And then one more miracle happened. Again, everybody's like, yeah, but I have my Fitbit. And
right.
I said, but I need to see what you're doing. Well, I put it into, you know, all the apps that are out there. And I'm like, there is no way on God's green earth that I can afford this app to create it myself.
Yeah. Right.
I cannot do it. And I'll tell you what happened. He emailed me information about the Diet Master Go app. And that's part of our program.
Oh, wow.
Diet Master Go. So now anybody that signs up for a 6 or 12 week program is immediately enlisted in the Diet Master Go app through my corporate portal with Diet Master.
That sounds it's so much complicated, but at the same time, it makes total sense because why? It already exists. My goodness.
Yeah, he saved so many lifestyle coaches so much money by allowing his system to be created. And I thank him every day. I mean, it's amazing. And I, you know, the bottom line, I appreciate the fact that not everybody wants to use the app, but you know what the advantage to my app? I go right in there. You know, their meal plans are in there. Their food logs are in there. And everything is, you know,
ready
is good.
Go.
It's legal. It's I'm not doing anything that I shouldn't be doing. And I don't have to. And they have all the access to everything in their portal in that app and can see everything that's available.
And so they still provide you the support, right? It has the
I do emails back to them. I'd have a large group in the app and I send emails to them all secretively. They don't know who's in there. It's very private. The message might fit all of them, but then the private person gets a message or advice each week, or we could be doing a virtual or face-to-face at the gym, you know, kind of thing. But the bottom line is it's the way that I feel I would have had to go that route or get out. And I didn't want to get out. And lo and behold, here comes that mobile app about 3 years ago. And it's reasonably priced for me. Now, not everybody and every coach is going to do something different with it.
Yeah.
And the behind the scenes IT people at that company do a lot with it and monitor to make sure the customers are active. It's really good scenario.
Good support. Good technical support. So you have all the knowledge with the nutritionist. Mm-hmm. And all of the formats are already ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get the people, you get to talk to the people, you get to introduce them to this, you know, amazing, beautiful program, and then they get to become self-sufficient in their fitness journey.
And that's exactly the idea, right?
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit more about nutrition. And if you guys want to know more information about Dialogic by Kathy Engram, she's going to share her social media. Send her an email or send her a quick message and she'll get you some really good information from today's episode. So let me ask you some questions about nutrition. What are what is a good way to start if you cannot afford the program food-wise?
Okay.
What are some basics of nutrition that you can say, hey, if you consume this amount a day, this is the basic, you know, advice that I can provide you guys. Fruit, you know, vegetables, ratios.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what's so nice about the program for people that couldn't, that wouldn't want to invest in the whole program, and why we have an Eat Smart session, because it goes from step one to step 10 of all the different questions. And, you know, I will tell you that most people watch way too much online meal prepping. You know, they cook 60,000 meals in a month, but they only eat 10 of them. It's too and then they sadly, that's an excuse that they can't afford to cook that many meals, or they don't have time. Right. So the first thing they have to do, I think, is definitely upload that or download that ADH change system on their own and study the food groups. Where it gets tricky is for them to understand approximations of how many they need. So when we do the metabolic calculations of their fat mass to muscle mass, when we find out their lean muscle mass, it helps us for utilize our metabolic equations that go all the way back to dietetics and the American College of Sports Medicine, and all the way through ACE and NASM. All the calculations are pretty close to the same. So we take those metabolic calculations, and if the person is a healthy individual, for example, we'll use their lean weight, and we'll be able to do those metabolic calculations real fast and tell them what their protein, carbs, and fat grams, and how many calories that equates to. So that's called macro calculations. To be honest,
so they can download this app, ADH Exchange, right?
Yeah, they can download that right away off the internet. And it's great because it divides up one. Well, first of all, the most important food group that most people need to learn about is the starch group. Starch, plants, and grains.
Talk to me.
Starch. Yeah. So when you say, when we say where do carbohydrates come from, you would say pasta, right?
Rice. All kinds of grains, rice. Yes.
Yeah. But you may not say fibrous vegetables and fruits and dairy and those kind of things. So the first thing they need to do is understand starch foods. And that's why the ADA spells it out, you know, whether it's a raw serving or a cooked serving, how much that portion would be. And that's important. And each of those food groups, Tati, has a grams of carbohydrates assigned to them. Like if you have 1/3 cup of cooked beans, that's 15 grams of carbohydrates or one starch. If you have a half cup of rice, that's about 22 carbohydrates. So it's about 1.5 starch. So first we have to know what equates to a starch. And the how do you know how much starch you need? It's based on physical activity, muscle mass, and total calories.
Once you do the ADH exchange testing and self, per se, you know, self-assessment. If you don't go with a nutritionist or with the program that we talked about, or any other professional program.
Right.
So tell me what's on your plate on a daily basis. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks?
So on my plate, I thought you meant at work. Okay, on my plate. Oh,
we know you're always busy. Yeah.
So it depends on the day of the week. Because I base what I'm going to eat on what time I have to go to work. Whether I'm going to teach first in the morning, you know, like if I have a 9 a.m. class, or if I'm going to be going a long stretch without eating.
Okay.
But I'll always have a large protein source.
Okay.
At breakfast. But for me, because I've always thrived better, I'll always have a small serving of fruit.
Okay.
And if I'm going to, I rarely can get out of breakfast without having starch, because I need starch. Everybody needs starch. So it'll either be some sprouted grains, some cream of rice, some oatmeal, or some of my homemade protein pancakes, something like that. But there'll always be fruit there and to digest, help digest. I'll also have a day, 2 or 3 days a week, depending on what's coming up later in the day, that I might start my day with a meal replacement shake.
Okay.
And which would consist of a scoop of protein powder I prefer.
Right.
Spinach, frozen berries, maybe just a tiny little bit of fat, maybe 2 fat servings, you know, right. Like a flax oil or flax meal. And sometimes I'll use water. Sometimes if I need a longer, I'll get a nutritious oat milk or almond milk or something like that for breakfast. And that would be classified in the class of a meal replacement shake.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I could or couldn't. I might have a half banana or I might have a slice of Ezekiel toast.
Okay.
If I have a smoothie 9 times out of 10, I'm going to want to come back with my mid-morning snack having a real meal.
Gotcha.
Because even though that had all the macros, it seems as though for myself, I can metabolize that shake.
Right.
With all those other things very fast, and it'll hold me for about 3 hours. Whereas if I have I forgot to mention, I do have eggs for breakfast most days if I don't have a shake or protein pancake.
Yeah. Wow. So basically colorful and try to hit all of the pyramid of
We
pyramid.
I would pretty much say we practically hit every food group and every meal. The main 3 meals, we always hit every food group, unless I'm doing starchless for dinner or something.
Right, right. What is your opinion on intermittent fasting?
Having failed miserably at even fasting for a blood test, I don't have a very high opinion of it.
Right.
Because it's very controversial. And it's hardly necessary for anyone that's not large. Say someone that is over 40% body fat or BMI. Whatever.
All right.
Yeah, they're high BMI. So in all the research I did, truly, there were 2 reasons that I could see that it could come into play. One was for the high BMI, because they have to lose weight to be able to get up and get moving.
Right.
And they may, because of their additional stored fats, body fats, they possibly could satiate themselves to an extent with some of their stored fats and last longer. But then the side effect sometimes is their fast gets extended and they may be doing empty stomach exercise, and it's possible that they're being, you know, somewhat misled a little bit by, is this fat or is this muscle or a combination? Because we have a lot of fat to lose. We do know that muscle gets spared too. We've pretty much proven that in our industry. So I'm empathetic to the person who needs the intermittent fasting.
Okay.
And I'm also empathetic to the person who has maybe they have a heightened, immune system dysfunction or something, and they can fast a little bit. But I think long-term for the average person, hopefully that you know and I know, they would be more successful getting up in the morning and revving up the engine, not shutting the engine down.
With intermittent fasting, right?
Right.
Okay.
To me, if I intermittent fasted after a few days after my insulin finally gave, you know, my glucose is going to be absent and after an hour or two of being up, then I have a problem because then I'm going to have an insulin spike eventually.
Exactly.
When the insulin, the glucose drops, the insulin goes up. And that's really going to really be harsh for somebody like me.
Yeah.
And which strains my kidneys. So I guess maybe a risk to it for the average people. First of all, it may not be necessary at all. And secondly, there is a kidney strain.
Right.
And but I came from the years of the Body for Life. You know, I've coached Body for Life clients and won them. And I saw the, you know, empty stomach exercise in the morning.
Yes.
And it is making a full circle.
Yes.
When my client won in 1998, by the way, she did not exercise on an empty stomach. She okay. ate first and then she digested and then she exercised. And she won the age 18 to 30 in the full program. She won all kinds of things, cars, okay. jewels, money. And guess what? She didn't do empty stomach cardio, which the creator of that program recommended.
Wow. So yes, I have to say that it's definitely mind blowing and it opens your eyes, because I have done intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. I do pretty much what you follow, because we're trainers, you know, we're mm-hmm. instructors. We know the basics, we've gotten to learn, but I have done intermittent fasting for several reasons. And in my case, it has been successful, but not always. So mm-hmm. it's always about the balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've done, for example, when it's like the holidays and I know I'm going to be like overeating because, hey, it's Christmas time, it's Thanksgiving mm-hmm. time. What is your recommendation? Because I know that for me, it may be intermittent fasting and meal replacement, but for other people may not. You know, it could be, of course, pacing, portion control, you know, being careful what your options are, because not everything that's available is good, which is why we titled this topic today, It Is Not That, right? It's all about being self-aware yeah. and being right there, logic, the diet logic, the nutrition logic, I would say.
Well, you know, the way I figure it, you're right. We're going to enjoy the special occasion meals. First of all, we call them special occasion meals, not cheat meals.
Yes. Thank you.
Secondly, we teach our clients, and I always love sharing these tips, to do starch banking, not fasting. Starch, take the starch away from your breakfast, your snack, your lunch, and eat your starch, the 4 to 5 starches. You're probably going to have a hard time resisting at your big meal, right?
Oh, yes.
For 1 or 2 days, starch banking or carb cycling, which are the two tactics I use, and they've worked like a charm for people for years. So starch banking, but it doesn't mean you're going to take the starch out, which is 70 to 140 calories, and leave that out and starve. It means right. eat more protein, fat,
right?
Protein, fats, and vegetables prior to a special occasion meal.
Right. That's so much good information. Oh my God. This is exciting. What are some foods that are good for a good sleep?
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, first off, I think the best thing for good sleep, so that your stomach is satiated all day, is to eat your proper, you know, proper times every 3 hours. Get up within an hour of waking up and eat. One of the tips that helps my clients the most is that if they're losing a lot of weight, they need to lose a lot of weight, we ask them to start eating when they get up and eat over a 12-hour period. And that's been a real successful tactic I've used for about 5 years now. And then my athletes, like instructors like you, if you get up and start eating immediately to keep your blood sugar stable and get carbs into your digestive tract, over no more than 14 hours.
Okay, yeah.
So that helps sleep.
Absolutely. It makes total sense, because I do partial intermittent fasting, which is a personal choice. I do half a day. I do from when I wake up until when it's time to eat my first meal. Then I have my first meal. Then I will have my big meal. And then I will eat a light dinner or a replacement. Because believe it or not, I cannot eat before teaching. But I do have to have some sort of like energy. So I will have like an energy bar, you know, like a granola. I will have a piece of fruit. I would have some carrots with some, you know, organic hummus or something that will keep me energetic, but not full, because I will have to be teaching with a full stomach, as if it's
right
specific amount of time. And usually, you know, when I'm off of my regular job to go to my fun job that I call, I don't have enough time to decompress, which is another issue in nutrition, which is the emotional and the psychological part. The recommendation is to eat at least how many hours before going to sleep?
That goes into the interview process, but what time did you wake up?
So say that I woke up for work at 6:40.
Okay. And then what, without being an intermittent fasting day, what time would be your first meal?
First meal will be at lunch.
Noon. Okay. So see, that in my program would be too large of a gap. So if you, I would say you might have a lot of self-control. So let's talk about people that don't have a lot of self-control. So what would happen to people that fast through breakfast? At the end of the day, they woke up at 6. They want to go to bed at 10:30 or 11, hopefully, right? At least. Well, during that time, discussions and seeing logs and seeing this all, what's happening is they're eating a large amount of food after 5 instead of 2/3 of their calories before 5. Yes. And so what it causes, not you, but others that who might have trouble, first of all, you say, I hardly ate a thing all day because I didn't start till 12. So that accumulation of this meal, that meal, this snack, this nibble, this unconsciously eating.
Yes.
Okay. Then we get to the end of the day. We had our meal. And at some point, most people who fasted would be going to
everything.
A snack.
So which basically... means,
yeah, they should have ate their breakfast, long story short.
So be organized in what time you eat and make sure you don't kind of like, you have to like even out your meals. It just makes sense. You will not go a day without doing something in your daily basis, like showering or, brushing your teeth. You have to do that. It's like taking those practices and leaving them all at the end of the day. You cannot possibly do that. You have to get up. You have to get dressed now. You cannot just get up and not get dressed. You cannot just do that later, can you?
No, but you know that eating and lifestyle management is always for a person who's going to struggle with their eating and their self. It goes all the way into their self,
right? What's more self-awareness important.
My appearance on the outside is very important. What's going on the inside is more important. But I think what happens is people mark time till they can do things better, and this week is not the week. If you let's say you struggle on Monday, I just had a conversation with the client last night in a virtual session. So she struggled on Monday because she was out of town on Sunday, which would have been when she got her new groceries for the week. So she's got the mindset, I blew it on Monday. Why not wait till next week? Instead of saying that was a one-time slip up.
Yep.
I can get back on track tomorrow. And that's what lifestyle management is. Lapsing, slip ups that lead to lapses, or I messed up on Monday because I didn't grocery shop Sunday.
Yes.
And I don't have any food in the house. And that becomes a slip up until it becomes a reoccurring everyday lapse.
Like a routine, something that started sporadically becomes a lifestyle practice. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So let me ask you some questions before we wrap it up. Mm-hmm. What tips do you give that could work nutrition-wise to somebody that has probably never worked out? Somebody who's in a different age group. Pretend that you are in a workshop and you want to give your final tip list to all of the listeners that are in different stages of their lives, male, female, young, old, and different, backgrounds in health-wise. What are some good tips that you can give them for their nutrition to better their nutrition knowledge and lifestyle?
Right. Number one would be before they can make an assessment of what to do, they have to know where they are now. So I would say write a 3-day food recall for themselves, including time, food, and portion. Don't worry about calories and all that stuff. That's, you know, that's not even necessary. If they do their own personal food recall and see what they glean from that information. And then once they do that, they'll see a lot. But I would say I have a list of 30 healthy habits. And the first one is get up early on Monday.
Okay.
Rise and shine. Be organized.
Yes.
Bright and fit, right?
Yes, bright and fit.
So rise and shine on Monday with the, you know, all the tools you need to mm-hmm. be productive Monday, set the pattern for the week. Second thing, believe it or not, is drink a large glass of water before your coffee. Okay. The third one is eat one apple every day, minimum.
Okay.
Okay, so three simple ones, really, right? The fourth one is plan and pack your lunch to avoid eating out.
Right.
Take your lunch with you to avoid eating out. Fourth or fifth one would be limit eating out to one time per week.
Eating out.
Yes. Okay. Limit eating out to once per week.
Save some money.
That way, that's hard to do. But that would become a special occasion. Okay. Another one is going to be, okay, if you're a single person and you're the only one you have to worry about, this gets tough. But if you have others in the household, the first person home does the cooking.
That's number six. Wow.
The first person. So whoever is in charge of deciding what the meal is, put the food thawed out or whatever, you know, thaw the chicken, have in the fridge. Know what it is, discuss what it is, and the first person, even put some tips on it, you know, hey, okay. Bob, this is a chicken, would you mind throwing it in the oven with some garlic and pepper and lemon, you know, blah, blah.
Yes.
So the first person home does the cooking.
Number six. Number seven.
Mm-hmm. Number seven. Probably the biggest thing is buffets and places where you go for celebration and celebratory, you know, that kind of thing. Pick through, look at the offerings at big events. Figure out if you know your food groups from the ADA, what's your starch you're going to have? Not pile starches on. So it's called pick, don't pile.
Yes.
Yeah. And then along with that, know your high risk eating opportunities in advance.
Number eight. Okay.
Yeah. So know your risky eating situations in advance. Then that would kind of fall into nine. Look at the menus and the restaurants online. We're lucky to be able to do this now before you go to the restaurant. Mm-hmm. At a restaurant, be the first to order.
Okay.
Avoid letting everybody else order. You were going to get a grilled steak and a sweet potato, but you heard everything else, and now you're getting a Alfredo sauce pasta dish.
Oh God.
So be the first to order. Just speak up, right?
Okay.
Drink water between alcohol.
Hmm.
Drink one, hydrate one, drink one, hydrate one. And then you won't want but one.
Right.
Right.
Right. What about, those are so good. Keep going. Yes.
I'm working on it. Let's see. Oh, take candy out of the candy dish and put apples or oranges.
Hmm.
Yeah. Like at work.
We don't right? have any candy or in my house.
If the children,
believe it or not. We
good.
Don't.
That's awesome.
What we have really? Is probably my granola bars that have chocolate chip in it, and they love it. So,
yeah, that's probably okay though. Good. So, reduce the visibility of high risk foods. So, like if you open your pantry, you know, and there's your, you
cinnamon
know,
rolls.
Foods that are risky, they need to go in the back of the pantry.
Oh, wow. So if yeah. I have cinnamon rolls, I'm not going to see the cinnamon rolls. They got to be in the bottom one. Gotcha.
Right. Here's a good one, I think. Always cook enough food when you're cooking, to freeze it for another day when you have the tough days. So make extra recipe and freeze it. I have right now in the freezer, for example, I made a really nice chicken dish a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to have it tomorrow night or Friday night, whichever night we decide, because it's already cooked. All we have to do is warm it up. But I don't cook a massive amount of entrees ahead.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I do when I travel, I cook entrees ahead and freeze them and label them for my husband.
Gotcha. Okay. So when you cook it and freeze it, how long is it good for?
It's not good for very long. I would say a couple of weeks to 30 days. Depends. I always, you got to really be careful what you freeze it in and wrap it up really tight. But it depends on what it is too, if it would even be decent to eat warmed up.
Right, exactly. And it depends on how many people live with you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you have a large family, obviously, the last thing I think that you want to do is make foods for you and foods for them, so that you're a short order cook for them and you're eating your diet food.
Exactly. Yeah.
Don't do that. If at all possible, avoid becoming a short order cook. Everybody in the household needs to eat the same healthy food.
Yeah, but I think it's typically more difficult when there are children involved.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you said, yes, you have to kind of like start soft and start your meal prepping and then kind of like start introducing the recipes. And this is what mm-hmm. I cooked for me. Yeah, it's absolutely understandable, because you can't force, your diet onto your family that quickly.
No.
Okay, so real quick, tell me a few other aspects of you. How would you like to be remembered?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one for me. I think as a good intuitive coach, being intuitive and coaching, meaning clients, but also family and reading people, I'm really intuitive. So, and I also have a memory like an elephant.
That's amazing.
So I have a stockpile of information up here. And just when someone thinks there's no way she could help me with my problems.
Yes, that's amazing. That's amazing. If someone were to write a book about you, what would it be called?
Oh my goodness. Boss Lady.
Yes, empowered.
Yeah.
Good. Tell me a big challenge that you had and how do you overcome it?
Well, I was the middle child and I always knew there was a person, that could be in a leadership role in the family. And then I got the chance to do that when my mother went to work when I was in high school. I got to be the leader of the little people,
yes,
the younger the siblings. Younger well, I was always a subordinate to the big ones. So anyway, how that plays into the whole big picture is that by being a leader to the children immediately out of the gate, and as far back as when I first left home as a child or young teen, 19, it became evident that, first of all, exercise had to be a part of my life because we lived outside. And I did find a void when I first got married. I had to find a way to get exercise because I didn't have peers. I have one person, the husband,
Right.
And so I had to find a void, which drew me to exercise. So I always want to reiterate that to people that they have to find joy in exercise. And it's not structured exercise as much as what we call physical activity.
Right.
Right. So that's a big one to me, is to always think about how to inspire people. I don't have to be a marathon runner to teach someone and motivate somebody. Even though I have done half marathons, okay.
Oh my God.
But I wouldn't anymore.
Right.
But you know what I'm saying? I wouldn't have to. I think that because we learn from our case studies, from our clients,
yes,
that we have this whole toolkit.
It's like you learn by teaching. It's the teacher learns from the students. That's when you know that you have made it, basically, because you are humble enough to know that, wow, you impacted somebody's life, but you also learned so much from this person. And my last question is, what are some good topics or tips in the emotional part? And the emotional obviously connects with the physical. So what emotional advice would you give to people out there who want to start their fitness and nutrition journey, but they're somewhat afraid, or they are insecure, or they have had past, pain or that trauma that comes with being, you know, or trying to be someone physically, but you have never had the foundation?
I think that coaches and the consumer of this knowledge and this wellness approach need to tame their enthusiasm a little bit and lower expectations, because a long time ago, I figured out less is more when I could get someone to come and exercise in 3 days per week, for example. Just take three really good, you know, effective workouts per week. Why would a person need to be in the gym 7 days a week? And so we, as fitness coaches, sometimes we embody this, or people think we embody this philosophy that it's an all or nothing approach. You know, that's where the no pain, no gain came from, right? But the truth of the matter is that if we want to be encouraging wellness and lifestyle change, we can't have those type of approaches. So I guess the way would be to say less is more. What's the least amount of time you can give to your health? Not the most, what's the least? And let's see what kind of net improvement you get. And then if you get a little bit of improvement, guess what? Fitness and wellness is contagious. It's so contagious. If a person could only lift 5 pounds in the first month, but the second month they picked up 10, that's contagious. If they got on the scale and they lost 1 to 2 pounds per week, that's contagious. If they looked in the mirror and they saw their former self, that's contagious.
It's a domino effect. One step goes to the second one, but at the same time, be empathetic and have some compassion. I feel like we need to have that mentality when it comes to fitness and nutrition, that, you know, those impactful foods and lifestyle and exercise, it's a combination of everything. And it won't work as a magic wand. It's step by step. It's your journey. It's your story. And my story will never be somebody else's story, because we're unique in ourselves, right?
And you know what, is the person listening that might be thinking, maybe I could change, or maybe it's time for me to change a little more. The thing about your body is, let's say someone is not healthy. They got, you know, they got these diagnoses of simple lifestyle medical problems, which would be pre-diabetes, high BMI, maybe mild hypertension, joint pain. You know, those kind of things. Your body still wants to heal itself. That's what's built into us, is an innate ability to take the nutrition we eat and the activity we do, and it'll heal you. You could take someone my age and turn them into a 40-something year old easily with reversing lifestyle, bad lifestyle.
Absolutely. Practices. I mean, so I've seen you train, okay? The amount of energy that you have, it's it's so high that, I mean, it's a lifestyle. You get to that with constant, you know, effort. I would say routine, but constant effort, you know, positive affirmations every day, and the actual decision to make it happen, to do it for the purpose of maintaining and prolonging your life, right?
Yes, exactly. And if more people would understand how wonderful their life could be if they were healthier, it would be so much easier for them. And every, and as I said, it just doesn't take as much as people think to be able to be healthy.
Absolutely. I agree.
One baby step at a time. But health is your wealth. You know, we've said that over and over again. Nutrition is medicine and exercise is life extending, you know, so those are the biggies.
Love it. I love that we close with that. And I would also add, in addition to what you said, that it is very important to know that, you know, no matter where you are in your fitness journey, you matter. Your life matters. Your heart matters. Your needs matter. So go and get help, get support, join a gym, you know, get your support system, your sister, your family, whoever that is. Start, you know, whenever you're ready, make the decision and know that it's going to make changes if you really believe in it. So I want to thank you so much for being in my podcast. This is a true honor for me to have you share so much knowledge with our listeners.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I always have a lot to say.
And if you guys want to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, my Facebook is Bright, B-R-I-G-H-T, letter N, Fit, F-I-T, by Tatiana, one N. And then on Instagram, I am as at Bright and Fit One. And you can send me emails with questions and topics to brightandfit1@gmail.com. And Kathy, share your information because I know there's a lot of people who want to know more about you and about the program.
Okay. Well, first of all, you can find my Diet Logic weight loss page, the master page on Facebook. I don't have that on Instagram. So Diet Logic Weight Loss Systems. And it's easy to find if you type that in. We'll have weekly tips there. Once you're approved to be on the Diet Logic page, I will often add you to my other page, which is my transformation page. And that's Kathy Sue Bradley-Ankrum, right?
Yes.
Diet Logic transformation page. And it's a beautiful green page with a plant-based female sculpture.
Yes, I so love it so much.
Miss it. Yeah, you can't miss it. And then my email is Susie, S-U-S-I-E, 126 at gmail.com. But if you do send me a message via the email, please tag it Diet Logic question.
Excellent. Thank you so much again for your time. And thank you for our listeners for your constant support. Without your support, obviously, this podcast will not be possible. And share it. Share the podcast, like it, and tell your friends. Thank you so much for your time. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of the day. Much love. Bye.